Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. It's dear to be different, just wonderful to have you tuning in, whether it's by the audio streaming midway 1548 in Satellite Islam. And we are truly, truly blessed. We've had some, topsy-turvy weather, sometimes hot, sometimes cold, rainy, but we are truly, truly blessed looking at the scenes of what's happening in other parts of the world. And our heart bleeds and goes out to those that are less fortunate. And really, when we look at what we have, we've got to, you know, thank the Almighty for all these blessings. This morning we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest, and that's Andrea. Now, Andrea is no stranger to Radio Islam. She's been with us a number of times from a regular program, and is always so informative, so knowledgeable, and she says such wonderful ideas. Now, Andrea lives in the most beautiful part of the world, near the Nizna Forest, and I know Muhammad is saying, well, we could be going down there. Well, I hope one day we could be going to visit Andrea's. I know it's an excellent place to be in, and I'm not too sure about the elusive elephants, but maybe we could see that as well. Now, Andrea is not just, she does a number of things. She's, contributes to magazines. She's involved in biodiversity projects, a number of others. And she's going to be sharing some wonderful information with us this morning. Hi, good morning, Andrea.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Very well, thank you. I said you are so fortunate. You are blessed. You're in one of the most beautiful parts of South Africa, right down that side there. I don't know if you've ever seen the elusive elephants. It's something I always, talk about, but I'm not sure we ever get to see them. And, truly blessed to be surrounded by such, Mother Nature, such beautiful bounties around you. What's the weather like around there this morning, Andrea?
It's an absolutely magnificent, it had lovely rain. The light penetrating rain that really goes into the soil and gets all the plants growing, and that was happening on Friday also. And now the sun has come out, and the grass is wet with dew, it's sparkling like diamonds, and all the birds are going crazy because they're just loving the weather here. It's green. I've got new growth on all of my plants because it's spring, and it's just flowers, flowers, flowers everywhere. So it's a beautiful time of year.
Talking about that, we seem to have had some topsy-turvy weather. We've had some brilliant sunshine, then we had rain, and then the temperatures seem to have plummeted. I know last night was quite nippy again. This morning, it's a bit of crisp in the air. What does it say to the plants, What does it say to the birds? What does it say whilst, looking out the garden? It looked beautiful this morning, lush and green, like you said. Lots of, new growth on the plants. That's on the one side, but the weather, going up and down, does it have an impact, this yo-yo effect?
Well, the thing that you really don't want is a late frost, because what happens is your plants decide it's spring, they grow, they put on a lot of soft, tender growth, and then if you do get a late frost, they burn quite nastily, and you get sort of a lot of blackening on the plants and a lot of damage on the plants. They recover, usually, unless they're little babies like your little baby tomatoes in your veggie garden and so on. So we just hope we don't have a late frost, because that's not something that we want.
Now, this month being our month, we've had lots of people planting trees. Some, fascinating, thing that I picked up was that when they did a count of trees, they found there was more trees than they thought in the world. Remember that one time they said that people are cutting down trees to the extent that there's deforestation. And while that is still happening, when they did the latest count, they found it was in excess of so many billion. Did you pick up that article, Andrea?
No, I didn't hear about that. It's very interesting, Smiley. It's excellent, encouraging news. I wonder whether it's because people have been planting trees or whether they've become better at busy surveying the amount of trees that grow in wild areas.
Well, I think it's both. They've been planting trees as well as, when they did this count, they did it, and at one time, I'm not too sure the exact figures, but it was more than a billion. And they said, at one time we thought we would not have so many trees, and now when you did a recount, and I thought it was very encouraging news. And that still does not mean that we've got to go out and cut down trees. I was quite horrified when I walked past some place yesterday, and I found about four trees being chopped down. I said, what's happening here now? Whatever it is, I think we've got to try and protect every tree that's planted. Is that right?
Well, there is also the matter of personal comfort. And, sometimes people buy a property and they plant too many trees. They might plant them too close to their house, which actually causes damage to their house. They might find that in time, the beautiful view that they actually bought the property for is closed off by the trees. they might find that their house is getting shaded out so that it's cold and uncomfortable inside. And in that case, I do understand that there is a need to open things up a little bit. And I really feel one can make amends. One could perhaps look at planting a tree somewhere else to make up for the fact that you had to chop one down or donate a tree to somebody or something like that. But yes, I do also understand that the trees can cause damage to paving, they can cause damage to houses if they're planted unwisely in the wrong place. And you know, you just don't want to be in a very cold environment all the time. A lot of people make the mistake of when they choose a tree, they insist that it must be an evergreen tree. Now, the problem with evergreen trees is that in summer you want shade and it's lovely, but in winter you want sunshine to be warm. And what they find is that they end up shading themselves out. Now, a lot of people say, oh, deciduous trees are so messy. But I've got news. The good thing about deciduous trees is they make all the nests at one time of the year. Leaves are not immortal. So an evergreen tree does drop leaves. But what it does is it drops those leaves throughout the year a little bit at a time. So you have to end up, you know, if you do want to rake your lawn or whatever, you have to do it quite frequently. Whereas with your deciduous trees, there's one time of the year, makes an awful mess, but you can rake up all those wonderful leaves and turn them into possible mulch for your garden, which is really good for your soil. It's actually a gift. So, and then you get the lovely sunshine coming through, of course, in the wintertime when you want to be nice and warm. So I do recommend that if you're planting in a place that might shade out the windows of your house or, you know, the areas where you sit outdoors, do think about planting deciduous trees, because then you can enjoy the sunshine in the winter and enjoy the shade in the summer. So nature looks after us in that way.
You know, two things that come to my mind is that once, you know, one is the stark beauty of this deciduous trees, you know, looking out of the window, and you sometimes see this just bare tree, but it's got its own beauty, you know, it's stark beauty, and I find that sometimes it's just fascinating, because here you see the tree, and while it's got no leaves, it has a beauty of its own, and I don't know if people could appreciate, because I think this is just a wonderful scene. Some, you know, you go out of there, sunshine coming through, and you find this, you know, this tree without the leaves, and I think it makes just such a wonderful picture. It's like a silhouette. And I, for me, that is, you know, it's such an enticing picture that it paints.
I love playing with my camera. And one of the things that I love doing is photographing trees when their leaves are off. Because it's just, you get the most dramatic shots. And, of course, you're very lucky. I believe you are in the part of the country where the white stinkwoods occur so well. And, of course, the white stinkwoods, I grew up in the Pretoria area. And there's magnificent ones there in Fountains Valley. They're actually quite fast growing, and they've got that beautiful, beautiful white, pure white bark, which is very pretty. They are a lovely, lovely deciduous tree. Just do be cautious. There's two kinds of white stinkwood. There's one with a smooth leaf, and that is an exotic that is actually quite invasive. It seeds itself all over your garden. It actually becomes a bit of a pest. But the real indigenous one has a rough, coarse leaf. When you feel the surface of the leaf, it's rough. It feels a bit like sandpaper. That's the one you really want. Because that one isn't really, it grows fast, it belongs in the area. It's not the Chinese one, which is the one with the smooth leaf. Absolutely beautiful when their leaves are off with the white bark.
Now, just listen to some of the advice that you've been sharing with us this morning, that when you are planting a tree, when you want to plant a tree, go out there and see what the tree looks like when it's matured, because then it gives you an idea of what you're going to get after 10 or 15 years, whatever the tree is matured. Because when it's small, you're not very sure. And you may then find that later on you're having to cut that down. And I think that's a sensible thing to do. Look at the tree in maturity, see what it looks like, and this is where the final product is going to be, and whether it will suit your living conditions. Is that right?
Absolutely. You know, people tend to forget that planting a tree is a long-term decision. It's not like planting a daisy bush or something like that. It's not like sticking in annuals. You're going to be living with this tree over a long period of time. So the way you site the tree is very important. You have to think about things like, is it going to create shade? Where is it going to create shade? How wide will the canopy spread? I lived in one house which I did not plant the trees. And there was a tree planted literally, I'd say, half a meter away from the wall. And I mean, that's just obviously such a bad idea. As soon as that tree's canopy began to spread, the canopy started knocking on the roof, knocking to come in, keeping me awake at night. We had to cut off those branches. Then the tree had a lopsided shape and looked absolutely awful. So, yes, do be cautious about that. And roots as well. Think about that. You don't want them getting into the foundations of your house. So you do get trees that have a more spreading root system, and you have trees that have a more taproot system. Think about how wide the canopy of the branches is going to get, because you don't want them knocking to come in the middle of the night. And as well, it can damage the structure of your house over the long term. I've also had some calls from people who have even had problems with their neighbors. So, for example, they have a tree in their garden, and their neighbor's garage is maybe a few meters away, and their tree damages that structure. And then the neighbor wants to sue them. And it's a whole mess up. It's a big, complicated thing in a court case and so on and so on. And then they contact me because I can supposedly tell them.
Maybe you can talk to the tree and slow down, please. I said, maybe you talk to the tree and tell the tree to please slow down.
Please slow down. Please slow down.
The other thing about the tree that I find many people have a challenge with is that the shade is very dense. You're not too sure what happens, and thereafter, when you try to plant things under this particular tree, it's quite difficult because you haven't realized how dense, and like you said, maybe becomes colder. That becomes a colder part of your garden, and then to garden under that particular tree is also a challenge.
Well, I'm very fortunate. I've got a sort of a seasonal garden. I've got one side where it's open and it's very sunny. And I've got another side which is an absolute forest of old milkwood trees, hundreds of years old, beautiful. And it's actually quite dark under there. You get that feeling that you're entering like a woodland cave. It's actually a beautiful feeling. Dark green shade. Now, in the summertime, that's just absolutely lovely. Then the sun's hot and bright. Go in under there and be nice and cool and relaxed. But as you say, it is a place where your choices are limited. You have to go then for forest type plants, and there is actually quite a big variety of things that you can do with shade, but you do need to distinguish between light shade, so that would be dappled shade, or areas where you get a bit of morning sun, the hours of morning sun, or of course your deep shade where the sun doesn't come in, and there your choices are a little bit more limited, but there are still things that you can do, beautiful things. So for example, we think about the clivias. Clivias are absolutely gorgeous. I mean, people all over the world have gone mad about clivias. You get these fantastic varieties that people have bred to be interesting colors, and they sell them for, thousands of pounds. But you also get the ordinary orange clivia, which isn't expensive, and it's very, very stunning. And a great fun to collect the seeds and germinate the seeds yourself. They look like little bulbs. And you plant them with half of the seed sticking out of the ground. It takes a while, obviously a few years, before they get flowering size, but it's quite fun to watch. Otherwise, you buy a big clivia, you're into instant gratification, which a lot of us are these days. Plant that in your garden, and you've got these magnificent, specifically orange flowers. The yellows are getting cheaper, but they're still more expensive than orange. You can get the yellows a lot more. They used to be very rare. At one time, people were paying hundreds, if not thousands, of rands for yellows. But you can get now peaches and apricots and, as I say, these wonderful collector's ones that are ridiculously expensive. But it doesn't have to be an expensive game. It's beautiful. They love the dark, dark shade. The big mistake that most people make with clivias is they plant them where it's a little bit too sunny. If your clivias have got yellow leaves, then your shade is not deep enough. If flower stems tend to be short and hidden among the leaves, your shade is not deep enough. Fortunately, they don't mind being moved. So there's a little tip for you. If your clivias aren't looking so great, and they're always yellow, and they tend to be a bit stunted, then the thing you need to do is to get them into deeper shade somewhere.
Well, thank you very much for that tip, because we were going to talk about clivias. There's two plants that really seems to, do its best is the clivias at this particular time. I think it's an absolute magnificent plant to have, and you see this beautiful show that comes through. And there's another one that comes out just at this particular time. Just trying to think which one that is. It's the...
Well, you guys have got perhaps Agapanthus already started.
Yeah, I think the Agapanthus, that's the one.
And they do tolerate quite deep shade. They're very adaptable. Most people see them as a thing as being for full sun. But I must tell you that I have grown the most magnificent Agapanthus in relatively deep shade. In fact, quite deep shade. I'm talking about that where the dappled sunshine doesn't really come through at all. And I have magnificent flowers on that. Some people say that they don't flower as well in shade. But I'll be honest with you, my personal experience, the varieties I've tried, that has definitely not been the case. And of course, now we sort of, we're talking bulbs, although admittedly the curvy isn't actually a bulb if you're going to be botanical about it. But we know we're talking about these things that grow with the strap-shaped leaves and the beautiful flowers. And a lot of those are shade plants. So you can really have a very exciting garden in shade. Ferns are another, but only if you've really got fairly damp shade. Shade is often dry. People don't realize that. If you have a very dense tree canopy, you don't get as much rainfall down there. So shade can be very dry. You need to check out what your shade is actually like. But a fern garden can actually be beautiful in the shade as well. At one garden I had, I selected a lot of different ferns, tree ferns and other types of ferns, and I created a lovely garden. But I must warn everybody against the sword fern, because that is an invader. And my gosh, does it take over.
It takes over every space.
It's terrible. It's terrible. And it takes years and years to get rid of. And it actually, it destroys the other plants. It just, it's too competitive. It gets on top of everything. And yeah, no, don't have sword ferns, not even one. I thought, oh, it won't matter if I have one. And, you know, I was away for a few years, came back to my property and discovered that I had a lot of sword ferns.
Andrew, I've got two questions that have come through. One is with regards, I've got an avocado tree. Is it destructive and how far should I plant it away from a property?
As far as I know, avos aren't that destructive. They're not very, very vicious growers. So what I would suggest is, well, look, obviously you don't want to have your crown contacting with your house. And if you're thinking perhaps one day of leaving your house to your children, you also must bear in mind that avos can get quite big. I would definitely plant it about 5 meters, I would say, would be the minimum.
5 meters away from any structure.
Yes, I would say. You know, just because it is going to be, you want to have enough room for it. You want to have space.
Okay. The second question that's come through, orchid cymbidium. It's now coming to the end of its flowering season. Do I dehead it or do I wait for the flowers to die off naturally? That's the first part of the question. And the second one, it was indoors. I brought it outdoors now. What other precautions should I take?
Well, with the cymbidium question, I would suggest do cut the flowers off because it does take pressure, it does take nutrition out of the plant now. So now you've enjoyed your flowers, cut off your dead flowers, you have more energy going into the roots for next year's flowering. The other question was, sorry?
You know, it was indoors and it's now been taken outdoors. Any other tips or hints on how to look after it?
Cymbidiums are extremely tough. They're actually quite like cold weather. They're a cold weather orchid. That's why they initiated the flower at this time of the year. Bear in mind, the time between the initiation of the flowering and the actual opening of the flower is several months. So they actually are quite cool weather orchids. Depending on which part of the country you're in, but certainly I've known people in Joburg and Pretoria, they just keep it in the shade of trees. And even here in the Southern Cape as well, people are doing that. They even plant them outdoors in the garden soil and they're perfectly happy. Cymbidiums are actually pretty tough.
Okay, and any special type of feeding, any regimen?
Oh, yes, you can get some. You can boost the flowering very much with feeding, and there are different stages of feeding that you can get. And these are the people that really want prize blooms out of their cymbidiums. You get the pre-flowering feeding, you get the flowering feeding, and then after that you get the phase 3 feeding, which happens after the flowering. So they are actually already prepared plant food for that, if you want to do that. But as I say, cymbidiums are extremely tough. You can't really go wrong with it. If you want prize flowers, go ahead and get the special stage 1, 2, 3 foods and give them their little liquid feed once a week. They will appreciate the extra love, but it probably won't kill them if you don't do that.
Question with regards to a lavender tree. Is that a good tree to plant, and how big is the canopy?
Oh, the lavender tree, that's a very pretty tree. It's a smallish tree. You know, how long is a piece of string? This is the problem that one always has. It depends on the shape of the plant. If it's now going to be a multi-stem, obviously it's going to have a wider canopy. If you keep it to a single stem, I would say, but that's just the ones I've seen, but it is a widish canopy. Think of it as being more spreading than upright. So I would again go with 5 meters away from any structure at the very least, just for safety's sake. I've seen it make quite a nice hedge if you are thinking of that. It's a nice tree. It's got I love the smell of the leaves. You must bear in mind our lavender tree is different to the lavender bush. The lavender tree is an indigenous tree, and it's got lovely shiny leaves that come out with bronze new growth. Flowers, not that exciting, but the odor of the leaves, the fragrance of the leaves is absolutely lovely. But yes, I wouldn't plant that too close to your house. You know, I always feel you need to keep an area around your house open. There's a variety of reasons for that. Of course, also I'm a country girl and I worry about fire. Apart from fire, you know, I just give them enough space. So I'm looking here, for example, my fever tree is probably a good 7 meters away from the corner of my house and doing good, and it's going to have lots of space. 1, 2, I'm pacing it out quickly. Yes, I was about right, about 7 meters. So yes, 5 to 7 meters, that's round about the closest you want to get to your house with a tree.
Andrea, what we're going to do, we're going to go to break for news. When we come back, we can talk about garden design. There's lots of people wanting just some ideas about garden design. We'll talk a little bit about companion planting. And then perhaps, if there is still time, or we can look at some questions with regards to food security. So we'll do all of that after the news. Thanks, Andrea.
That's
we'll check
I look forward to that.
Thanks, Star.
Did you know that gardening is the fastest growing hobby in the world? Islam highly recommends planting trees and urges people to protect them to the extent that planting a tree is considered as an act of worship for which special prayer is recommended. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Unless you are compelled, do not cut down a tree." So join Ismail Faryava every Sunday between 8:30 and 9:30 a.m. on the program Dare to Be Different.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dare to Be Different. My name is Ismail Faryava. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's by the audio streaming, Medium Wave 1548 and Satellite Islam, and wherever you are. And we hope that you're having a wonderful time. And if you are joining us, please remember you can join our conversation. And the number to dial is 854-1548. We've got a wonderful guest, and that's Andrea, out in Southern Cape and in one of the most beautiful parts of the country. And she's given us some wonderful ideas with regards to trees. We've been talking about trees, and she's given some wonderful tips about clivias, I beg your pardon, about clivias. And she's spoken about the different colors that are now available. So those of you clivia enthusiasts, remember it's not just the orange ones. You can get the yellow, and perhaps if you are more adventurous, slightly more expensive, but you can get them in different colors. Hi, good morning, Andrea.
Good morning again. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. And like you said, different colors of clivia, so we'd have lots of people interested in buying that, because at one time we only had the orange. They make a magnificent display. We've got them under in a shady area in your garden, and just wonderful to see those blooms. And when you do see them, you know that, well, spring's not very far off, and warmer weather's just around the corner. Andrea, we're now going to be talking about garden design. Lots of people are now rearing, wanting to go into the garden, but may need some assistance with regards to how they should be planning their garden. Any ideas on that?
Well, I actually have a very, very good idea, and it's the only real way to plan your garden in the long term. Remember, you're in this for the long run. It's not just about this summer. It's not just about next spring. It's not just about next autumn. It's about how your home and your garden are going to look in years to come. So what I very strongly recommend is that you get an overview. And when I talk about an overview, I mean literally an overview. Nowadays, if you connect it to the internet, you can go on to Google Earth and actually get a screenshot of your property from the top. And you can use this as a basis of planning your spaces. One of the things that I really love is the idea of the outdoor room concept. So what that means is your outdoor spaces are functional, just like the rooms in your house. You do different things in different rooms of your house, and the same goes for your garden. You do different things in different spaces of your garden. So, for example, you'll have your utility areas, where your washing line is, and where your compost heap is, and where your veggie garden is, unless you decide to go ornamental with your veggies and make your veggies all pretty in between your plants, which is also nice. Those areas you normally would want to have screened off from, for example, your entertainment areas. When you've got guests coming around, you don't want them looking bang into your washing line. You think about the whole experience of moving through that garden, going into different, we could call it outdoor rooms. Now, how do you define an outdoor room? You define it with your plants. So you can create walls, with shrubs or trees. You can create a floor with ground covers or grass or paving or stepping stones or whatever the case may be. And you actually take people through a journey when they come through your front gate. So from your front gate to your front door, people are actually going through a small experience in your garden. And you can think about how you can make that experience interesting and exciting, visually exciting, making little changes in the surfaces, making changes in the color and so on. But the main thing that you need to think about is the structure, the permanent structure of your garden. And when I say permanent, I'm talking about your shrubs and trees, your long-lived plants. These are the ones that are going to define the different spaces. If you've got a big garden, you might want to have a little corner that's yours on your own for peace and quiet. You might want areas where you entertain. You might have a pool area, but some people do, where people are going to be having fun around the swimming pool. And you need to think about how you're going to define those spaces and what the experience is going to be in that space. You can also think about the psychological effect of colors. So, for example, white colors are stimulating. So normally you would keep your bright color around your entertainment areas, where you've got people having fun together and socializing together and so on. Those lovely bright colors help to keep the vibrant atmosphere going. In areas of your garden where you want to relax and be calm, you might then want to choose calmer colors, different shades of green, and very, very soothing to the eye. And then maybe with soft colors like soft pinks, soft blues, soft whites, that just enhance the calm and the peaceful atmosphere of that part of your garden. But as I say, and I do want to emphasize, the permanent structure of your garden is your trees and your shrubs, and relocate those is the most important step that you're going to take. Take a look at your property from above and think about how that your choices are going to affect the circulation, the definition of space, and so on. Think about what you're going to do in different areas of your garden so that you can design it to be as functional and as beautiful as possible. And the best way to do that is from above. Just like when you design a house and you look at the house plan, you look at it from above and they say, okay, well, this is how people would move through the house, this is where the rooms are, this is where the lounge is. Obviously, you're not going to sleep in your garden, presumably.
Well, what about an afternoon nap?
An afternoon nap, why not? On a lovely hammock between two trees. How nice could that be? I'm actually looking to buy a couple of hammocks this summer. Just the hammock place has been closed. Oh, I'm very cross with it. But that's the Southern Cape for you. We only wake up in the summer. And of course, children's play areas as well. You need to think about that. You know, kids need space. They need to run around. I'm not a major fan of lawn, but I will say that as long as you don't, please don't use chemicals on your lawn. Because if you're using it as a children's play area, you don't want them busy getting pesticide exposure and herbicide exposure when they're playing on your lawn.
Oh, I think it's just a wonderful idea. You know, I haven't thought of it to get into Google Earth and then to look at your property from there and then to plan it. And like you said, as a utility area, you know, functional, every little space that you've got, you can then cordon it off into rooms as you, and it makes it so much easier to be able to contain that garden because you know exactly what you want in this particular room of the house. So this particular part of my garden, this is what I've got. I've got a veggie patch here, or I've got maybe fragrant flowers in that particular area, or I've got a play, and I think there's so many exciting things that, you know, you could do with that concept. Now, you know, the challenge I think that we'd have is what do I plant once I have all of this in, and I know I'm going to be doing all of this. Would the next step be deciding on the different plants that you have? Would that be the next?
That would be the next step. A lot of people make the mistake of starting with the plants. If you have specific favorites that you really want to include in your garden, list them to yourself, write them down on a piece of paper. But first do that theoretical exercise. How is it going to look? What am I going to be doing in the different areas of my garden? Then from there, you can sort of draw it out. You can map it out. You can say, I want to have a shrubbery here. I want these shrubs to be about so big. I want to have a tree there. I want it to spread around about that wide. As I say, how long is a piece of string? You can't ever be 100% sure. But you can get an idea. Do I want a big tree there? Do I want a small tree there? Do I want a medium tree there? Keep to those basic, non-specific things while you're doing your design. And then from there, you can start looking for the plants that you want. And the lucky thing is that you don't have to be an expert. You can go pop in at your local garden center, or you can talk to a landscaper if you would like somebody else to do the layout for you. But I would strongly suggest go to your local garden center, say to the folks, look, this is the plan I have for my garden. What plants could I use to fulfill this plan? I want these plants in this area to be around about this high. My actual philosophy is start with a permanent element. If you're starting from scratch, you've got a newly built house, or you bought a place that was completely bare and you want to liven it up a bit, start with those bigger plants. Get that framework in first. And then from there, you go on to the finer details, the lower growing plants, the color, the bulbs, the pretty stuff. That is, you know, lovely little flowers that you can pick and take into your house and so on. That's your last step. First step is definitely getting that framework in. And you can get expert advice. For no charge, just pop in at your local garden center and ask the folks. Say, look, I want a plant that is so big, evergreen or deciduous. Ideally, if it could have that color flowers, that would be nice. And hear what they have to say. Because these people have spent a long time studying all of this. And they know what you can get and they know what thrives in your area.
You know, I'd also like, and I think it's just a wonderful idea, is the one about, you know, the floor space in your garden. So you could have, you know, like you said, hard landscaping, you can have lawn, and you can have ground covers and all of that. And I think that's just a fantastic way of doing that. And I think we've got a call in line. Let's take that one before we continue.
Sure.
Hello, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Please go ahead, Ben.
I just wanted to find out, I got a lemon tree, and do I have to prune it now? Is it the right time? And what do I feed it with to make it juicy? And
okay.
Another question is, I want to find out, and the lemon tree is already starting to get flowers.
Okay.
And the other question is, when do I, is this the right time to plant a fig tree?
Okay, you can listen off air, Ben.
Okay, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Andrea, we've got three questions here from the listener. She has a lemon tree, and she wants to know, is the right time to feed, and should like the lemons be juicier? Is there a way of making the tree, the fruit juicier? And the third part of the question is this the right time to plant a fig tree?
Yes, I am very fond of having a lemon tree in my garden, and I would not prune it, definitely not at this time. I believe the lady was also asking about pruning. It is in flower, so if you prune it off now, you're pruning off the fruit that you want to enjoy. So I wait until after you have picked your fruit, before you even think of pruning your lemon tree. Then around seeding, yes, very much so. A great time to feed your lemon tree. I'm not sure how big it is, but I would strongly recommend that you use, I'm very old-fashioned this way, I love 315. 315 means 3 parts nitrogen, 1 part phosphorus, and 5 parts potassium. Now, potassium is the food that you use for flowers and fruit. That really helps them to develop. And the nitrogen helps the juiciness. That rapid growth is what you want if you want juiciness. So I would suggest go around your tree. Remember now, where a plant feeds, and this is really clever, trees have a clever way of feeding. Their feeder roots are spread out in the area known as the drip line around the canopy. So imagine it was raining right now. The rain would fall on the canopy of the tree and it would drip off the leaves and land on the ground in a certain area. That is where the feeder roots of your tree are located. And that's where you want to get the fertilizer. So what I usually do when I'm feeding my lemon tree, and there are more than one ways to skin a cat, as the saying goes. It's a very gruesome saying. I don't know where it comes from. Anyway, there are more than one way to do a thing. But this is my way. I go around the drip line. And I select, I dig little holes, all around the drip line, around about, I'd say a pace, 2 paces apart, depends on the size of the tree. My tree's not very big yet, it's about 1.8 meters. So I would go sort of a pace apart, around my drip line, digging little holes, and then I would put some 315 in there, close the holes, and give it a jolly good watering. And you'll be amazed what it does. That said, you also get some fantastic formulations that are slow-release pills that you actually push into the ground. And I did do that once, and I had great success with my lemon tree, pushing these little slow-release tools in around my plant. So do go and have a look and see what's available, see what suits you. There's more than one way of but that's how I do it.
What about planting a fig tree? Is this the right time?
A fig tree, well, it depends on how you get it. If you want to try and plant it open root, so in other words, dig it out of one part of a garden or out of a friend's garden, and then put it into your garden, this is not the right time. But if it is a container-grown tree, so in other words, it's in a bag or a pot or something like that, you can plant it at any time. But the figs, we must please all remember, any figs, the edible figs, the ornamental figs, the wild figs, all the figs, have got very, very vicious root systems. So do be careful. Don't plant it near your utilities, as in your water supply to your house, your walls, obviously, your house walls. So keep it a little bit away from things that you don't want roots getting into, because otherwise you may have problems later.
Okay. I've got another question. It's coming from a young child. It says, I am a child, would like to grow a vegetable patch. I live in a townhouse with a garden. Which is the best place for me to plant a vegetable garden or vegetable patch?
If you're in a townhouse, it's very difficult to have a dedicated vegetable patch. But what you can remember is that vegetables are actually quite pretty. They've got leaves. They've even got flowers, if you let them flower. It depends also on the plant. But I mean, if you've ever seen your beans in flower, for instance, it's actually quite pretty. They have got leaves that are different textures and so on. So what I would actually suggest with a townhouse garden is that you ask your mum and dad if you can maybe plant, for example, a border of carrots in one place. Very nice at the front of flower beds, because they've got those pretty fluffy leaves. The seeds come up nicely. Just remember, don't plant, ever plant seeds deeper than their diameter. So if you look, how is that seed? It's quite small. So you will only be covering it very, very lightly. And then you'll be watering, obviously, very, very carefully with a fine spray of water to not disturb your seeds after you've sowed them. You could do a little border of carrots. You could grow some spinach or some butter lettuce. Butter lettuces are so pretty. You get reds, you get greens, you get frilly leaves. And you can plant them as ornamentals in between the flowers in your mum's garden. I would suggest there that you possibly consider germinating them in little seed trays. And then when they've come up and they look like plants, they've got more than one leaf, more than two leaves actually, you can start very gently lifting them out of the soil with a stick and then sticking them in and planting them. Or you can buy them in six packs at the garden center as well, of course. It's still cheaper than busy buying lettuce in the shop, and your mom will be very thankful to you. So spinach as well. Spinach, you get beautiful spinaches today. There's golden yellows, there's bright greens, and this is the leaves. And there's, of course, also the red ones. I'm sure you've seen them, Ismail, the red spinaches.
Yes, lovely, 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 you know, and I've seen them in gardens, you know, Andrea, and it just makes a stunning display when it's grouped together, you know, a whole lot in one, you know, sort of clustered in one section of the garden.
Exactly, exactly. And it's very, very pretty. It's bright red, it's colorful, and it looks so pretty on the plate. It looks so pretty in the garden. So your mum's only going to be thankful. But do talk to your parents about where you're going to plant, and look for the filling in the little spaces in between where they already have some sort of garden.
Another question coming through. I've got both a lemon and lime tree in containers. Any specific advice?
Well, any specific advice, do keep them fed regularly. I would say at least every 6 to 8 weeks you want to give them a good feeding. Remember that container plants do lose their nutrition very, very quickly. Every time you water, soil is washing right through the pot. Nutrients, not soil. Nutrients are washing right through the pot, coming out the bottom in that drainage that you see. And you must water like that. You can't just water the soup superficially. You want to see water coming out the bottom of the pot. But immediately you've got that, you've got leaching. So in other words, leaching is where the nutrients dissolve and go out of the bottom of the pot. So the one thing about container gardening of any kind is to feed regularly. So every 4 to 6 weeks, give your plant a jolly good feed. Do keep an eye on it against drying out. And do watch out about them becoming root-bound. So if you feel the soil and the soil isn't loose anymore, it's just one big mass of roots, then obviously what are those roots eating? They don't even have soil. In that point, you either need a larger container or you need to look at planting out.
Thank you for that one. Let's go back to I've got a couple of minutes. We're talking about design, garden design. I was speaking about, you know, floors in the garden. I thought it was a wonderful idea that you had given us, that you could look at different, you know, sort of things to put in the garden. So you could have a patch of lawn, you could have a patch of you know, hard landscape, I beg your pardon, you could have pebbles, you could have any of those things. But I think it makes it such a wonderful idea, you know, that, and I didn't, that thought didn't come to my mind ever. So now you can look at it from the top and say, well, this is what I can do, and these are the different rooms I've created in my garden.
Yes, I love that concept as well, because, you know, an outdoor space should be a useful space. It shouldn't just be a beautiful space. Obviously, you want it to look nice, but you want to make it livable. You want to make it a nice place to be when you're doing different things. And that's the thing to think about. What do I do outdoors? What do I want to do outdoors? What kind of spaces do I want to create in order to make that a wonderful experience.
Well, thank you very much for all the information. Unfortunately, we cannot continue with all the other things that we set out to do, companion planting, and I... well, next time, Andrea, there's always a next time where we'll chat to you, and we're wanting to go through some of those wonderful recipes that you have for us for, you know, keeping the pest at bay and so forth. So when we do talk in a couple of weeks, we'll chat and we'll follow up with some of those things.
We always chat so nicely, we never get around to half the things we want to talk about. But in any case, at least we're being thorough.
Yeah, no, but thank you very much, Andrea. You enjoy the rest of the day. Have a wonderful time and get out into your garden. I'm sure you're going to be doing some wonderful work. And you take care. We'll speak to you soon.
Speak to you soon.
Thanks, Steph. Bye-bye. That was Andrea Durham from the Southern Cape giving us some wonderful ideas. I must say she's inspirational, always lovely to talk to, always sharing so much information. And it's an absolute pleasure, you know, when she comes in and wanting to give us everything that she has, that she can share. And that's what gardeners are all about. I must say to you, and every people in the world of gardening, always prepared to share, always prepared. There's no secrets, you know. They want him to tell you exactly what has been done and how it's been done. And really, as we're going along, we are learning all the time and we are able to share with others as well. That's all for me until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.